The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF. We've been broadcasting NPR news and NPR programs for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 8th, 2017. Good afternoon. I'm Kyle Kellums. Slow news cycle? What's that? On today's show, the University of Arkansas counters rising national increases in sexually transmitted infections with a new testing clinic. Congressman Steve Womack will discuss efforts to collect sales taxes on internet purchases and more. First up, this weekend, the Seven Hills Homeless Center in Fayetteville invited the community to its day center. They discussed ways in which people can help the shelter with its services. But as Seven Hills tries to engage more of the community on a smaller scale, the staff and board are facing a much greater problem, keeping the day center open as money potentially runs out. Last week, the city of Fayetteville stepped in to help, but that won't be enough. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek spoke with Seven Hills officials about what happens next.
Well, I have been quote-unquote homeless since July. And when I first became homeless, I relied on them for essentially everything.
Trey Stanley is one of the 500 people who come through the Seven Hills Day Center on School Avenue in South Fayetteville each month.
I'm a Marine veteran. I thought I knew everything. However, I didn't have a clue of what it was like to be homeless.
He says the day center gave him a place to shower, get a meal, and send his mail.
They gave me a way to talk to other homeless people and just see how it was, see what was going on around me, because I had no idea.
Stanley says he has 30 years experience as a carpenter, but lost his assistant superintendent job back in 2009.
I had some other management jobs that didn't turn out well, and finally I had to put my tool badge back on and attempt at doing production work. Well, I'm 52, and in carpenter years, that's really, really old. And then I split up with my wife, and basically that's it. And you know, no vehicle. And couch touring, I felt so guilty about bothering my friends, and I just said, well, I'm going to move into my tent.
Now the day center that Stanley and hundreds of others rely on for basic needs could close its doors in a matter of weeks.
Yeah, we wouldn't know what to do. Anybody that was new to being homeless certainly wouldn't know what to do.
Lynn Carver is the president of the Seven Hills Homeless Center Board.
It's been a struggle for us. We have been successful in raising the money that we need to maintain our operations, but it's pretty much been one payroll to the next in terms of the consistency of the funding. So we don't have a stable, consistent, substantial source of revenue.
And she says there's something else hanging over their heads.
The land that we're sitting on has a balloon payment that's due in June. And if we cannot raise the $325,000 or find someone who is willing to donate that or buy the property and lease it back to us, then this center will have to close because we will no longer be here.
Carver says Seven Hills bought the land on School Avenue about 2 years ago with a $75,000 down payment after they had to leave the previous location on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Since then, they've only been paying interest on the property. Carver says in December, Seven Hills got a six-month extension on that $325,000 balloon payment.
We have approached banks in the area, typically anyone with good credit, because we have equity in this property and the buildings on the property, would be able to get a bank loan and finance the property and the building. And that's what we would like to do. But because of our credit history and the fact that our income is so at risk all the time, we have not been able to find a bank that would allow us to refinance the property.
Carver says 6 months ago, Seven Hills also lost funding they got through a local foundation. After that foundation felt Seven Hills wasn't viable.
So as a board, we took a good hard soul search. We talked for hours on several different occasions, you know, what the possibilities were. are there other organizations that could do any of this? You know, are there pieces we could pass? We had some conversations with other providers, and ultimately what we found were the other providers in the area are stretched so thin, they don't have the capacity to just suddenly assume more bodies.
Carver says the board was torn, but they decided to stick it out.
I redouble our efforts to raise the money and to make our case to the public. And since May of last year, we have, you know, worked as hard as we can.
The day center would have closed a week ago had the Fayetteville City Council not stepped in with $150,000. On the last day of January, the council voted unanimously to enter into a service contract with Seven Hills. Carver says that will keep the day center running for another 6 months.
What we told the city council and the case we're trying to make to the public is that we have, this is a Band-Aid. It's not a fix. This is a little bit of the funding that it takes to keep these programs up and operating, and it's not even beginning to address the need for this balloon payment or what happens next fiscal year.
She says the contract with the city will be renewed every 2 months.
If in 60 days, if we can't demonstrate that we are finding new people to come to the table, that we do have a prospect on this property and the balloon payment, that we are having conversations with other cities and county governments to for them to step up and figure out what their role is to play, then we might as well not. There's no point in saying you'll give us money for 6 months. We are not going to be here in 6 months if we haven't had success in 60 days.
Solomon Birchfield is the director of operations for the day center. He hopes this moment of crisis will wake up the community.
This isn't an issue that Seven Hills can fix. And so we're trying to let the community know that the community works through us. So we only work with as many resources as we have donated. So we're hoping in this period when everyone's paying attention to homelessness that maybe there's a community champion that steps in and helps underwrite some of our services.
Birchfield says as the homeless population in Northwest Arkansas goes up, so do the costs to Seven Hills.
When you have 800 showers taken here at the day center, you're going to have a big water bill. When you're feeding 1,600 meals, it's going to incur some costs. So the staff that it takes to maintain these facilities and coordinate the delivery of these services, those all have a price tag attached to it. So it does cost more as the needs increase.
But Birchfield says he's in it for the long haul.
What else are we gonna do? I mean, we're committed to this. Everyone that works here feels like it's their calling, you know? We wouldn't wanna work anywhere else, and so we're gonna stay with it as long as we possibly can. And I really do think we have the kind of community that cares, that wants to support this organization. So I'm really optimistic that we're going to get through this.
And Birchfield has Lynn Carver and the rest of the board in his corner.
Overall, the entire infrastructure that we have is not taking care of the problem. The need is far greater than the resources that we have in this community to take care of the problem. So we got to up our game. And we know that. And we think that that's doable. And we think that there are people and organizations in this area who will step up but did not realize the magnitude of the problem.
The Seven Hills Day Center is open Monday through Friday from about 8 a.m. until 4 or 5 p.m., and its staff is determined to keep it that way. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Seven Hills also operates a homeless veterans program that's funded by the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, and they also operate a transitional and permanent housing complex on Huntsville Road. Lynn Carver on the board says that program, too, is facing financial uncertainty. According to the CDC, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, the three most commonly reported sexually transmitted infections, are at an all-time high. To help address the issue, the University of Arkansas recently launched a new STI testing clinic. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
More than 1.5 million cases of chlamydia were reported to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in 2015. That's the most reported disease in the history of the CDC in a single year. Young adults 15 to 24 years old account for nearly two-thirds of the reported chlamydia diagnoses and half of the gonorrhea diagnoses. This report from the CDC caught the attention of Mary Alice Serafini, the executive director of the Pat Walker Health Center on the University of Arkansas campus.
We became alarmed when we saw the Centers for Disease Control report that This is the most reported disease in a one-year period of time. It went beyond all the other diseases that we monitor. Part of our responsibility is public health, and we monitor communicable diseases. So when chlamydia became the most reported, the highest rate of disease, we thought, you know, we need to do something.
The health center is tackling the issue by launching the Get Yourself Tested walk-in testing clinic for chlamydia and gonorrhea. Get Yourself Tested is a national campaign, but organizations often adapt it to fit their needs. Serafini says many people can contract a sexually transmitted disease and not know it because they don't have symptoms, and that's who this clinic is for. During clinic hours, patients can take a urine test and expect the results in 2 to 3 days.
If people want more testing, they can make an appointment and we can do all the testing that you want. We recommend testing at every appointment that we have, people to the point where, oh, gee, do I have to listen to that again? But it is a very high priority in our population. Not everybody's sexually active, obviously, but those who are, we want them to be safe, and we don't want them to contract a disease that might leave permanent damage.
Serafini says they have noticed a somewhat dramatic increase of chlamydia on campus.
We see a lot of it. We always have to be cautious about the numbers because students can go anywhere they want to get tested for chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, HIV. So yes, we do see quite a bit of testing for chlamydia, and we see positives. And so we know it's in our population, and we know that we should be responsible and get and offer the testing.
According to the CDC, more than half of state and local STD programs have experienced budget cuts in recent years, resulting in more than 20 health department STD clinic closures in 1 year alone. The organization says more access to screening and treatment would reduce the spread of chlamydia and gonorrhea, which are curable with antibiotics. Education is another way to combat the increasing prevalence of these diseases.
We hope that this is a way that students also become better educated about sexually transmitted infections and how to prevent them. Condom use, abstinence, really knowing your partner. We have had partners come in and get tested before they have sex. That's a possibility. So we just hope it results in some very thoughtful planning and thinking and self-care.
The clinic is available from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Saturday the health center is open. More information is available at health.uark.edu. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Third Coast Percussion, February 28th at 8 p.m. This percussion ensemble makes use of 300 metal instruments, including tiny cymbal-like crow tools, large gongs, Burmese temple bells, and metal coils to create groundbreaking sounds. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets and information. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers local news where we live, play, and work in Benton and Washington counties. It's one newspaper for one region. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, online at nwadg.com. Ahead this hour, Congressman Steve Womack talks about his continued efforts to make online purchases subject to sales tax collection.
Look, I understand all of the arguments. At the end of the day, I wish people would just be a little more honest about it. They don't like the legislation because they don't want to pay their taxes.
That's later on today's edition of Ozarks at Large.
The new animated documentary Tower tells the story of the 1966 mass shooting at the University of Texas, when a sniper in a tower at the heart of campus opened fire, killing 16 and wounding 36 others. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the director, Keith Maitland, and Claire Wilson James, the first person shot in the attack. She was 18 and pregnant at the time. Join us.
Fresh Air, twice every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums. A bill that would defund sanctuary campuses, of which Arkansas has none, failed yesterday at the Capitol in a legislative committee. By a voice vote, members shot down the bill by State Representative Brant Smith of Jonesboro. Smith feared rogue professors would force Arkansas universities to become safe havens for undocumented immigrants who commit crimes.
This is directed at the radical fringe anarchist types that want to change our campuses from those decent places where people go to get an education into what we saw over the news at UC Berkeley.
In a line of questions, fellow Republican Deanne Vaught of Horatio in Southwest Arkansas broke with Smith on the bill. She says Arkansas campuses have already pledged to follow federal immigration law.
But right now, already in our state, have they not already all signed, but they would lose all monies if they allowed it to happen. So my question is, did you know that they had already signed these
to block it and that
they would already lose all monies if they participated in something such as a sanctuary school?
I was aware of some of that.
Smith argued that universities could be pressured to change positions in the future. Several dozen opponents of the bill, overflowing from the committee room into the hallway, cheered when the bill failed to pass. Smith says he will not try to reintroduce his bill. In Washington, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton is pushing legislation designed to reduce the number of green cards given to legal immigrants by half. The Reforming American Immigration for Strong Employment, or RAISE, Act spells out a plan to reduce legal immigrants to about 638,000 from the first year if adopted to about 539,000 10 years after potential adoption. There were just over 1 million legal immigrants to the United States in 2015. He says if passed, immigration would be based on a merit system.
We prioritize immediate family members. We keep immigration preferences for spouses and unmarried minor children of citizens and green card holders, but eliminate them for extended relatives, like parents, adult siblings, and adult children.
If passed, the bill would eliminate the 50,000 visas currently available through a diversity lottery and cap green cards for refugees to 50,000 per year. Arkansas's other U.S. Senator, John Bozeman, says he thinks the newly confirmed Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, shares his value of having education decisions made at the local level. A statement released after the confirmation notes the senator's experience on a local school board and praises the new secretary's desire to return decision-making control for classrooms to communities. She was confirmed after Vice President Mike Pence broke a 50-50 tie in the Senate, the first time a vice president had been needed to break a deadlock vote for a cabinet nominee. Celebrating women's right to vote in Arkansas is the focus of observations at the state capitol this week. It was 100 years ago yesterday that Arkansas became the first non-suffrage state to allow women to vote in primary elections. Kathleen Pate is the president of the nonprofit Arkansas Women's History Institute, and she was an organizer of an event yesterday at the state capitol.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that this legislation was not applied equally to all women. There were still barriers, discrimination based on race, based on socioeconomic status. But this was a small step in the right direction, and we have every reason to believe that women's primary suffrage in Arkansas is what led Arkansas to be an early ratifier of the 19th Amendment.
Arkansas was the first southern state to ratify the amendment, which recognized women's right to vote. Several legislators and Governor Asa Hutchinson participated in the recreation of a historic photo with suffragettes on the steps of the state capitol yesterday. The latest U.S. News and World Report ranking of best places to live in the country puts Fayetteville at fifth, just ahead of Seattle and just behind Washington, D.C. The 2017 ranking mentions the Northwest Arkansas region's dramatic growth, natural scenery, trails, green spaces, food, festival, and arts. Austin, Texas, topped this year's list. Mercy Hospital Fort Smith is again designated as a primary stroke center by the Joint Commission, a nonprofit healthcare certification organization founded in 1951. The certification is granted if a hospital is in compliance with national standards, adopts an organized approach to performance management, and meets other qualifications. According to the United Health Organization, Arkansas is among the 10 states with the highest percentage of people suffering strokes. The in-house futurist at Ford Motor Company will deliver the Winthrop Rockefeller Distinguished Lecture at the University of Arkansas next month. Cheryl Connelly has twice been selected as one of the 100 most creative people in business by Fast Company magazine. In an interview with NPR last year, Connelly explained why an automotive company employs a futurist.
When you think about the millennials, their parents are baby boomers. The traditional baby boomer bought their first car at 16 and saw that getting their driver's license is a rite of passage to becoming an adult. And today, I'd argue that the cell phone does that for our kids. And so we have to recognize that for companies like Ford to reach that younger consumer, it's not going to be about aspiration or status symbol.
Her lecture will be Friday, March 3rd in the Faulkner Performing Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus, and it will be free and open to the public. An invitation to the NCAA basketball tournament might be harder for the Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team to claim after a loss last night to Vanderbilt in Bud Walton Arena, 72-59. Arkansas has now dropped back-to-back games and is 6-5 in conference play. Up next, a Saturday night game at LSU in Baton Rouge. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith baseball team is now 2-2 after losing yesterday at Crowder Field to Northwest Missouri State, 6-3. UAFS will host Missouri Western State for three games beginning Sunday afternoon at 2. And the University of Arkansas men's golf team, ranked 31st in the country, finished 4th at this week's CBEST Invitational in Florida. Yesterday's result is the third consecutive top finish for the Razorbacks.
With the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Mark Christ of the Arkansas World War I Centennial Commemoration Committee.
100 years ago, on February 8, 1917, the United States Senate voted 78-5 to support President Woodrow Wilson's decision to break off diplomatic relations with Germany over that nation's declaration of unrestricted submarine warfare. Arkansas Senator William F. Kirby was one of the five opponents, writing, "I regard it as a preliminary declaration of war. Under the Constitution, he has no power to declare war, but he has the power to plunge the nation into war and to make it necessary for Congress to declare it, and he has almost done so." The next day in Little Rock, the Arkansas General Assembly engaged in a furious two-hour debate over a resolution to condemn Kirby's statements. The resolution's author, Representative W.B. Brooks of Little Rock, said, "I am first, last, and all the time an American citizen, and when any man offers an insult to that flag, I say strike him down." The resolution ultimately failed on a 55-32 vote. To learn more, visit ww1arkansas.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. When it comes to federal legislation requiring online merchants to collect sales tax across state lines, Republican U.S. Representative Steve Womack of Arkansas has long been one of the more prominent GOP backers of such a measure. Meanwhile, on the state level, a bill to collect taxes on internet sales has passed in the state Senate, now heads to the House. Karen Trico Stewart, with our partner station KUAR, recently spoke with Congressman Womack about the issue.
So to be clear, under current law, online merchants are not required to collect sales tax except in states where they have a physical presence. But Arkansans who buy tax-free online are supposed to turn in those taxes to the state, except no one really does. Remind us a little bit about why you support this legislation and requiring that online sales tax be collected no matter where a company is located.
Well, first of all, as a law-abiding citizen, I believe that if there is a law on the books that says I've got to pay a tax if based on certain circumstances that ought to pay the tax, Arkansas is a very sales tax dependent state. And most of the cities and counties, in fact, all of the cities and counties in our state have become dependent on the collection of sales taxes as a method of financing essential government services. So when you have a collection system based on a new retail and emerging retail market that is online out of state, then you've got the distinct prospect, and I think it's absolutely certain, that these political subdivisions that rely on these taxes are being denied this revenue stream that they by law are supposed to have. So I think it's a terrible disadvantage to the local retailers who have brick-and-mortar stores, hire our neighbors, serve on councils and school boards, pay ad valorem taxes to support local schools, but yet have been placed at a disadvantage because some out-of-state warehouse with some college-age forklift operators can take sales away from them because people are making decisions based on the fact that they're not going to have to pay that use tax. And I think that's just terribly unfair.
And so those who are opposed to this measure make a couple arguments. And what they say is that it's unconstitutional because essentially it amounts to taxation without representation. And they worry that such a law is bound to bring forth a lot of lawsuits. What are your thoughts on that debate?
All of those arguments are smoke screens. They're smoke screens. But I understand all of the arguments. At the end of the day, I wish people would just be a little more honest about it. They don't like the legislation because they don't want to pay their taxes. Arkansas is going to have to make up for this lost revenue in some other fashion, which means our taxes are going to go up in other areas. We would be better off if we just passed the legislation that we've advanced in Congress so that the lawfully due and collectible taxes are actually remitted back to those political subdivisions. And here's the better news. Here's the better news about it. If my bill became law, and if Arkansas opted in under this law, then the state of Arkansas has passed already in its General Assembly, and Governor Hutchinson has advocated that the proceeds from a windfall from passage of the Remote Transaction Parity Act would be used to reduce the income tax on all Arkansans. That's what I think we ought to be looking at. And if people will just take a brief moment, clear their head, and be objective on the issue, they'd have to agree that a level playing field is a much better situation than what we have now.
Congressman Steve Womack, thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. All the best.
That was Karen Trico-Stewart from our partner station, KUAR, speaking with U.S. Congressman Steve Womack of Arkansas, who co-sponsors legislation to collect taxes on internet sales. States wanting to tax online purchases received good news last year when the U.S. Supreme Court let stand a Colorado law that called for online retailers to do so. Now, in about 7 minutes on Ozarks, our militant grammarian returns with a list of words many of us might be using incorrectly. It will not be an ironic interview, and you may end up bemused, but stay tuned. Right now, a man who always correctly guides us toward great live music, Timothy Dennis, is with me in the Harold and Blanche Cox studio. Happy Wednesday, Timothy.
Happy Wednesday, Kyle. Do you feel out of place coming into this studio to record parts for the show?
I don't. It feels, it's right next door, so I have to walk 5 feet to get to this studio. Right. It feels natural.
I try to make it feel comfortable in here.
I appreciate that.
Let's just jump right in. This Friday, there's a band called the Rainbow Girls. They're playing at Smoke and Barrel. And a little bit about the Rainbow Girls. They're a collaborative of songwriters. They are multi-instrumentalists, vocalists. They're California natives, and they say that they subscribe to a wide spectrum of genres that they claim is hard to classify, but it's something along the lines of funky, bluesy, soulful, psychedelic pop with roots in folk and rock and roll. Their music focuses on harmonies, and apparently they swap through a variety of instruments throughout their set, which also includes acoustic and electric instruments. They're playing a show at Smoke and Barrel. It starts at 9 p.m. with Handmade Moments.
Oh, yay!
The show at Smoke and Barrel is $7. It will be the last show for Handmade Moments in Fayetteville before they again head out of town.
Okay.
But don't fear, they are actually playing another set at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs Saturday night at 9 p.m. That show is $5.
So you got two chances to see him before they head out of state.
Exactly.
All right.
Let's move ahead to Saturday. Have you ever heard of a guy named Stanley Jordan, Kyle?
Yes.
What do you know about him?
Immensely talented, immensely respected by other musicians. I don't know how old Stanley Jordan is, but...
Well, he's been at it since the mid-80s.
Yeah, sort of one of the, I don't know if I'd say living icons of his music, but certainly one of the most familiar names.
He's definitely virtuoso at guitar.
Yes.
His style is very distinctive because instead of strumming or plucking, his style mostly focuses on tapping on the strings, or touch style, as some people call it. And the way I was originally exposed to him was several years ago, there was a YouTube video circulating of him playing Stairway to Heaven on two guitars at the same time.
That'll get your attention.
He is actually playing Saturday night at the Founders Room in Alma.
which is an intimate, cool space.
So unfortunately, that 6 p.m. show is sold out.
And again, it's a small venue.
It is a small venue, but they're always bringing in great performers like Mike Marshall, who played with the David Grisman Folk Jazz Quintet. To find out more about shows they have coming up, you can visit thefoundersroomofalma.com. Now, if you're still looking for music Saturday night, don't fear, because in Fayetteville, there's a show that's probably going to be pretty intimate. It's at Stage 18. Justin Peter Kinkle Schuster of Water Liars.
Ah, yes.
And then Adam Torres of Texas. So Adam Torres, he's a singer-songwriter, and I wouldn't quite call his voice a falsetto, but it's definitely higher octave. Out across the open plain, lost from sight, never to be.
Yeah, it's a very, what would I say? It's got a very sort of otherworldly nature.
Yeah,
to
a
it.
Very eerie, but mm-hmm. otherworldly, I think that's the best term for it. So they are playing a set at Stage 18. It's $10 at the door. It's part of the On the Map Festival.
Extended
calendar of events.
Yes.
So $10 at the door, Stage 18, doors are at 7. Now, Sunday night, the Twos, they're going to be back in town. It's their first show in town in Fayetteville since they released their new album, Outer Sounds. Well, and I could write the book we're not to say when we're in the car. We're on the way home from Christmas at my parents' house. We're headed to yours. Well, and I've the tendency to overthink the smallest things is the kitchen sink. And it's a day that I can't ignore. Well, and I could write the book, but not to say when we're in the car. And they have some roots in southern Missouri as well. Exactly. I mean, half the band is now in Fayetteville. The other half lives around Joplin, Springfield area. If you want to find out more about the album or the band, you can listen to a segment I taped with them earlier this year in the studio, or you can visit their website, thetwosmusic.com. Now, one more concert I want to mention before we get out of here. Next week, Valentine's Day.
Which is Tuesday the 14th.
Tuesday the 14th. There's going to be a show on Mount Sequoia that a lot of people should be excited about.
Yes.
Willie Watson and Arkansas.
Willie Watson, who was on our show.
Yes, the Roots Festival
right.
in 2014.
Right. And is a dynamic entertainer.
It's a $20 show. But it's going to be in the auditorium there at Mount Sequoia. In my mind, it is going to be one heck of a show because you've got Willie Watson and then you've got Arkansas for $20. I will let you be the judge of whether it's worth it or not.
All right. And that'll be on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville.
That will be on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville. The event says it starts at 7. We'll go to midnight. We'll see how I feel Wednesday morning.
Okay. Very good. Timothy, thank you.
Thank you, Kyle.
And we'll hear some more Willie Watson from when he was on Ozarks at Large as part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival later to end this edition of Ozarks at Large. That's ahead. Tomorrow on Ozarks, a change may be coming for children of Marshallese descent living in Arkansas.
You know, out of everything else, if this, you know, this care, you know, this benefit for children is actually very meaningful to us.
That story and much more on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF and anytime at KUAF.com and available as a podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, and other services.
Did you know the University of Arkansas has a space lab? But it's not orbiting the Earth. I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science.
Join us this Friday at 2:04 p.m. during Science Friday for the premiere of KUAF's own science-based segment, Scratching the Surface, with Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager. Caitlin works in the U of A's Space and Planetary Sciences Department and each week she'll bring us the latest information about our solar system with discoveries made from the U of A Space Lab. For more on the University of Arkansas Space and Planetary Sciences Department, or for segments of Scratching the Surface, spacecenter.uark.edu. Scratching the Surface with Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, debuts this Friday, 2:04 p.m. on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. Catherine, you've got a sly smile on your face today. I don't know what you're up to.
We're playing quiz today.
That's what I was afraid of.
You're a very careful user of the language, I know.
I try to be.
So tell me if this sentence sounds correct to you. Uh-huh. When he met with the president-elect, President Obama emphasized the enormity of the job he would soon be leaving.
Okay, we're going to focus in on that word enormity.
That's the target word.
Right. My gut, I would not write that sentence because I don't like this. My spidey sense is tingling there that that's not right.
But what do you think most people think enormity means?
It's a big thing.
Yeah.
Right.
It means profoundly immoral or evil.
What are you telling me?
I know.
What?
I know. I was blown away.
Wait. The enormity of... So this would be correct. The enormity of the demon.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're assuming
this. The enormity of the crimes committed by the Nazis in World War II.
Oh, now see, you hear that and you think
it means... But you think it's large because there were a bunch of them.
Right. But what it's meaning...
The immorality of it. Yeah.
I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Wow.
And, you know, therefore, who wonders how long it'll be around as correct? It'll probably be changed soon to mean big.
Right. Literally, yes.
Yeah. Well, the subject today comes from a website called Lifehack, which published a page called 25 Common Words That You've Got Wrong. That's one of them, clearly.
Yes.
Okay, Kyle, what does irony mean?
I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean rain on your wedding day, as in that song from a couple of decades ago.
Okay, yeah.
Irony means it's the opposite of what was expected.
Yes. Is it always funny?
No, sometimes it's tragic.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. Some people think that it's something that's funny.
Read an O. Henry short story. That's got irony.
Right, exactly. Yes. And irony can be funny, but not everything funny is ironic.
And not everything unusual.
Right, yeah. It's got to be really something you expected to go the other way.
It's the twist.
The Titanic boasted about being 100% unsinkable, and then it sank.
Not funny, but ironic.
Definitely ironic.
Yes.
Okay. How about this one? After I changed that tire, my appearance was a travesty.
All right. The common thought about travesty is it's a joke. It's not at all representing what it should be. Like a very bad baseball team that makes several errors is a travesty of the game.
That's good. That's pretty close.
Okay.
I think in your head you've got it exactly right. It's a mockery or a parody.
Okay.
But people use it as tragedy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's not that.
A travesty can lead to a tragedy,
absolutely.
But they're not synonyms. No.
Yeah, the word comes up in the Hustler versus Fowler Supreme Court transcript, and they use it correctly. They're talking about some people may remember it. It was the Jerry Falwell's first time parody ad in Hustler magazine. And Isaacman, who defended Flint, said that it was a travesty. And I had never thought about. I certainly didn't know that it was that specific, a parody or a mocking.
So sometimes what you and your colleagues do with the gridiron is a travesty.
Travesty, yeah, in more ways than one.
Never a tragedy.
It's a tragedy and a travesty.
All right.
What do you think this means, the word ultimate?
Ultimate is the final. The right? One of my favorite sports quotes ever. There was a football player. This was 10, 15 years ago. And he was, you know, how the Super Bowl just has 2 weeks of buildup and all these press conferences. And someone asked this player, what do you think about playing in the ultimate game? And he said, why would we call it the ultimate game if we're going to play again next year?
Now, for the season,
it is because
it's the final game of the
season.
But
did he mean the most wonderful, fantastic game? The guy
he was actually calling out, like, no, well, it's not the ultimate football game because we're going to have preseason in 6 months. So it's not the final game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had it right.
A lot of people think of it as the one, the only, the best. Right. And, of course, I think we've talked before about penultimate, which is one of my favorite words that nobody knows how to use.
Next to last.
Next to last. That's all it means.
Antoinette Grajeda, a couple offices down, that's one of her favorite words, too.
Yeah, and people want to say, it's real funny because they put that on to put that on the wrong definition of ultimate to make it even better.
So they think that ultimate is great, which is wrong. And then they think penultimate is even better, but it's not. Which brings me, you know, there's a sport that some people call ultimate frisbee because I don't know why it's called that, but it's not ultimate. It's not the final frisbee.
No. Well, I mean, that's just naming things. You can
play
with
the rules.
With that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I apologize, ultimate fans. All right.
Okay, Kyle, if you ask me to peruse a manuscript, am I likely to do it quickly or take a long time?
Ooh, this has trick question written all over it. I think it means a long time.
It does.
Okay.
It means to observe in depth.
Right. But a lot of people do use it as sort of a cursory glance.
I just perused this. Yeah. I perused it, and I didn't see anything just in my, you know, first 5 seconds of looking at it. You know, you can't peruse in 5 seconds.
You have more words on this list?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I haven't looked at this list. While you're giving me some others, I'm going to look one up in case it's not on the list that a friend of mine pointed out to me once that I was saying wrong. You go ahead.
All right. Kyle, if I say that I am often bemused by your stories on the radio, is that a compliment?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're... Gosh, I don't. That's a good one.
It is a good one, and I wasn't as sure of it as I am now. Bemused means confused.
Okay,
so that would not be a compliment.
Right, right. That's kind of. I've always thought of it as sort of a gentle confusion,
like
a charmed confusion.
Maybe so.
But
yeah, yeah. But it's not amused. It's not the same as
right.
amused.
Right, right. No, definitely not.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you'd feel better if I said your story was terrific.
I would feel better, should
Guess
I not?
What? It shouldn't. It means horrific to inspire fear.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
It does not mean fantastic or good.
Well.
It means full of terror. Terrific.
Huh. Wow.
And the site that I got this from said that they expect this will be changed in the dictionary quite soon.
I would assume, yeah.
Because nobody. But until then, try using words like, inspirational or something like that. And while we're there, we'll pair it with awesome. Awesome means to inspire awe.
Right.
But people often use it just to say it's good.
Right. No.
Well, you could inspire awe. I mean,
awe-inspiring.
Something could scare me enough that I would be full of awe.
Sure.
But doesn't mean it's good. Okay. And finally, here's one that will really surprise you.
Before you do that, in case this is the word. What about nonplussed?
Oh, you and I have talked about that. So let's hear what you say about that.
For decades, I thought nonplussed meant you had no opinion whatsoever. I tell you a funny joke, and you just shrug your shoulders, and you're nonplussed because you don't care. My friend Ed Gubbins, who's a writer and a journalist, discovered this one day and told me, and we went to the Oxford Dictionary and looked it up. No, it's you're so surprised, you're so amazed that
you're dumbstruck.
You're dumbstruck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not laissez-faire.
Mm-mm.
It's the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So
you fixed that.
Yes.
You fixed that in your head.
Yes. I was nonplussed.
To know that you had been using it correctly.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Well, now, Kyle, you know about the fire that swept through the Ozark Regional Transit fleet recently.
Yeah.
So would you want to correct me if I said the fleet was decimated?
No. I mean, it was 20 of... You know, at any time they have 24 buses working and maybe 30 in the whole fleet, and it was 20. So, no, it was decimated.
And so that's more than 10%, right?
Yeah. It's
that's what decimate means.
Wait, what?
Decimate means to destroy 10%.
very specific.
Yes.
So if I have 10 pieces of china and I drop two of them, I didn't decimate. And I drop eight of them, I did not decimate them. I have to just drop one to decimate.
To decimate. Now, of course, needless to say, nobody is using this anymore.
Right, but that sounds, it comes from, I'm sure, an accounting or something like that. Right.
Deca means 10.
So if you're looking at the bottom line of something, we need to decimate all office, all departments, you take 10% off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
And as they said on the website, for the time being, decimate actually means removing only 10%. But the traditional definition is definitely antiquated and probably will be. I actually didn't look it up in the dictionary. It'd be interesting for us to do that when we finish and see.
Yeah. Okay.
Until then, you can use words like exterminate or annihilate. By the way, I looked in the latest AP style book, didn't find it, but from what I recall from my learning journalism days, destroy is a complete word.
Wiped out.
You can't partially destroy something.
So in the unfortunate case with Ozark Regional Transit, their fleet was not destroyed, but there were buses that were destroyed.
Yes. Right. Each individual bus was destroyed.
Yeah, 20 different buses were destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah. But ORT was not. Mm-hmm. Rising from... Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
okay.
Not decimated because it was more than 10%.
Wow, how about that? Catherine Churls is our militant grammarian.
It's a black fly in your Chardonnay. It's a death row pardon 2 minutes too late. And isn't it ironic? Don't you think? It's like rain.
A tax break designed to attract military retirees to Arkansas is now law. Governor Asa Hutchinson was surrounded by veterans yesterday when he took pen to paper. The law exempts military retirement benefits from the state income tax.
I do believe that the legislation will be a significant economic boost to this state. And so this is a broad and encompassing benefit for all of the military retirees, regardless of the component that they served in the United States military. Is that not worthy of a round of applause?
There are detractors who are not happy that the $13 million cut will be offset by additional taxes on soft drinks, unemployment benefits, and digital downloads. Don't forget, you can hear classical music tonight on 91.3 KUAF. Tune in at 8 for Of Note, KUAF's local classical music program with Katie Hendrickson. Then at 10, Peter Vandegraaff with our overnight classical music programming. That will last until Morning Edition begins tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Classical music on 91.3 starts every Sunday through Thursday night at 8. And you can listen to classical music anytime on KUAF 2, which is available on your HD radio at KUAF.com and on your free KUAF app. And also KUAF 3 with 24/7 jazz. And on the weekends, a chance to hear again KUAF's locally produced music programs. In fact, Saturday morning from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m., it's an encore of Friday night's Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg. Then on Sunday at 11, Jazz Travels with Steve Wilkes. At 1, The Pick and Post with Mike Shirky. At 3, Ozark Highlands Radio, produced in Mountain View at the Ozark Folk Center. That's from 3 to 4. At 4, it is from the foothills of the Ozarks, the Folk Sampler with Mike Flynn. At 5, KUAF's own Vinyl Hour. And at 6, Paul Kelso and an encore airing of the Generic Blues Show. That's on KUAF 3, also on your HD radio, your KUAF app, and at KUAF.com.
In the latest edition of Short Talks from the Hill, we hear again from Walton College of Business Finance professor Tim Yeager. In this episode, he describes how following the financial crisis of 2008, large banks were required to undergo stress tests, and how that differs from the requirements for smaller community banks.
They still have to do stress tests on other various parts of their risk. including interest rate risk, let's say, or commercial real estate concentration.
Yeager says considering those testing requirements, it's not a big leap for community banks to run the same macro stress tests as the big banks. He's developed a tool to help community banks run those kind of tests. You can find Short Talks from the Hill under the Local Programs and Podcasts tab at KUAF.com.
The Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra welcomes violinist Philip Pagotti as he performs Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto February 18th at the Arendt Arts Center in Bentonville. The winner of the APO University of Arkansas Concerto Aria Competition will also perform. Tickets and information at arkansasphilharmonic.org. And 91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Springdale. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending some time with us. Another brand new show tomorrow at noon and 7 on KUAF. And if you'd like to know more, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com. And as promised, more music from Willie Watson to end the show. This was recorded when he was part of the live Ozarks at Large as part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival inside the Walker Community Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. Don't forget, he'll be in Fayetteville Valentine's Night, Tuesday, February 4th, on top of Mount Sequoia at 8 p.m. Thanks so much for listening.
In 1883, some un-Mexican cowboy come stepping up to me, saying, "How are you, young fella, and would you like to go?" And to spend another season with me in Mexico. Stand.